You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You're listening to the Paul James and Soccer Podcast. Commentary and analysis by Paul James, former Canadian soccer player, television analyst, coach, and member of the Canadian Soccer Hall of Fame.
Well, here we are with episode 24 of the Paul James on Soccer Podcast, and the big event this past week was the kickoff of the Canadian men's national team's World Cup qualifying campaign for Brazil 2014. The Canadian women's national team also announced the hiring of their new head coach, while the Canadian MLS clubs had a rare week off. Let's start off by talking about Canada's World Cup qualifier at home against St. Lucia, which kicked off Group D in Canada's initial round of World Cup qualifying. After a somewhat disappointing first half, Canada rebounded in the second half and dispatched the St. Lucians fairly comfortably 4-1. Paul, what was your assessment of Canada's performance?
Well, I think the fact that they won the game, Steve, I think is good. In fact, it's great, and they are top of the division. I mean, clearly we could see that the standard of the St. Lucian team was poor at best, and they were surprisingly so out of shape for the level they were competing at that, you know, I think that speaks for itself as far as the overall quality of the game. You know, Steve, I have to say this, it reminds me a little bit, sometimes as a coach you will have inter-squad games between all the players that you have in a squad, and it could be at any level. I think a lot of coaches will relate to this, and certainly Stephen Hart. But sometimes when you have those inter-squad games, they can become a little bit chaotic if the level and depth of quality that you have within that squad is poor. And when that happens, the game becomes chaotic and becomes almost a situation where you feel uncomfortable for the starting 11 because they're in positions that they shouldn't be in. Their quality is not good in certain areas. And the game against St. Lucia reminded me of that, for sure, is that the opposition was so poor and so disorganized in some aspects, including the physical part, because so many players were going down with cramps as the game wore on. I mean, even just after half-time they were doing that. But I think that needs to be a consideration when you evaluate the game, because it becomes difficult almost for the team that is the strong team and the team that wins the game in the end. And that was with Canada. You know, I thought Canada were at times a little bit poor in the attack in third, with their finishing. The quality of finishing was poor for sure. But in many aspects, I think you need to take in consideration that the opposition were so poor that it wasn't an overall fair reflection on what Canada can produce, even when they play top opposition down the road. Having said all that, I have to say this, that Cathal Kelly from the Toronto Star wrote an article the next day, and to be fair to him as well, I thought he wrote a brilliant article on Joey Barton from England, who's now at Queen's Park Rangers. It was a brilliant article, and he absolutely nailed his situation with Joe Barton, and I have to say, I don't think he's too far off the mark with his assessment of that particular game and the future of our national program in terms of qualifying for Brazil, and he's basing it on what he saw against St. Lucia. So I'm trying to balance it there, Steve, with saying that on the one side we should understand why it's a chaotic performance at times, particularly the first half, because the opposition was so poor. But on the other hand, if you take the perspective of Cathal Kelly, which I thought was very good, that I think it does expose some major weaknesses that Canada have, including depth of talent, but certainly in the attacking part of the field to be able to finish. And then question marks still remain for me in the middle of the park. And I'm not so sure whether what Stephen Hart was doing, whether he was going out with his strongest starting 11 based on the players he has available, because for me, that's not his strongest starting 11. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he does in the next few games.
One of the weak aspects of Canada's performance at the most recent Gold Cup was the few scoring chances the team generated via open play. It was clear that the team had been working on their offensive game significantly in the training sessions leading up to the St. Lucia fixture, and the team did generate a large number of scoring chances, while at the same time after the match many of the Canadian players lamented the fact that they did not finish off more of those chances. What did you like and what did you dislike about Canada's attack against St. Lucia?
Well, I think that it makes sense as well, Steve, that they would prepare for, in the final third and for finishing off opportunities. That would make sense because they knew that who they were playing. They knew they were playing home and that they were going to attack them from the get-go. What I didn't like is some of the very poor finishing. It's not about, I mean, scoring four goals. If St. Lucia doesn't score that goal and make it nerve-wracking for everybody involved, including the media, the fans, and the players, and the coaching staff, they haven't scored that. The game ends up 4-0, probably a few more, and we would maybe be singing a slightly different tune. But, having said that, with the some of the chances that they had, I mean, it really did look like high school boy performances in terms of the misses. And I think that's, it never is a good reflection on what a national program should be. You know, Simeon Jackson, without being unfair on Simeon Jackson, clearly, I mean, he completely mishit the one, and he's a premiership player. He's our one player that we have in the premiership, or at least part of a squad that's in the premiership. So, I think those aspects were disappointing for sure. What I liked is the fact that Stephen Hart played a slightly different system. I mean, you could still say it was 4-3-3, but with Dwayne De Rosario and Ian Humers being the two central strikers, I thought that was quite good because he still had the wide players, Josh Simpson and Simeon Jackson out wide, and they were always high in terms of attacking. So, it was almost like a 4-2-4 with the two central midfielders, Atiba and Julia de Guzman. But, I thought that was good, because that got numbers forward. It's easy for them to get numbers forward. And then either Ian and Dwayne would drop into the midfield every time they're comfortable at doing it to almost become that attacking midfield player, which then switches, almost seamlessly into a 4-3-3. The problem with it, though, with St. Lucia having so many players behind the ball and with their chaotic nature of the way that they defend and almost sporadic, it was almost not tactical in any way because they were kamikaze with their tackles. But again, it was it's awkward to play those teams, and you couldn't quite get to see where Canada were trying to thread good patterns of play, because there was always open space, and when you had open space, you attacked it and they created chances. So overall, I thought it was it was good from an attacking perspective in terms of creating chances, but in line with what the players say, they would be disappointed with finishing them off. And I would, certainly agree with that. I thought it was very poor in many aspects. The worrying part was how that on earth that St. Lucia could even get some counter-attacking opportunities, which they did on a few occasions. Throughout the game where we looked like we had numbers, too many numbers forward. That should never have happened in this particular environment. And and yet it was. And the final thing is with Ian Hume, it's nothing's changed with Ian Hume. He wears his heart on his sleeve every time he goes out. And it looked like he was devastated by his performance. Me reading his body language anyway, coming off the field, he looked devastated, and if I was him, I wouldn't be so devastated. He had a great header. I don't think it was a miss. It was he did really well to direct it on target, and overall showed his enthusiasm and passion. I thought in the whole scheme of things, I thought he did okay. But if we're completely honest, and I mean the fans and media alike, but there has to be some worrying concerns when you look at the overall performance on the day.
Given that the occasion is World Cup qualifying, and given that we so rarely get to see Canada play, I'd like to take a page from Canada's national pastime of hockey and have you give me your 3 stars for the match.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, Steve, and I think particularly based on again, the game and just the nature of the game, because it was chaotic. I don't think anyone truly stood out as coming away as saying, well, they had a great game. But nevertheless, you've asked the question, so I'll go this way. I'll go with Atiba Hutchinson. There was a surprise starter, but nevertheless, a smart decision by Stephen Hart, because without Atiba in there, who knows what would have happened, because he still has that that extra bit of pedigree that I don't quite see in other areas on that Canadian team. And if he's just come back from injury, which he hasn't played many 90-minute games, I thought he put in a solid performance, and he was the one player that always looked like cutting the opposition open through thoughtful balls into space and the penetrating passes, you know, even out wide. So Atiba Hutchinson for me, you know, a class player on and off the field, good leader. So he'd be my number one. Josh Simpson scored 2 goals. He was a bit hot and cold. I was quite impressed with Stephen Hart playing him on the right. I thought that was a subtle little change to change the wide players, which meant he's not right-footed. He's abundantly not left-footed. Not right-footed. And but what it does is allow him to cut inside and use his left, which would have been a little bit of a surprise, I imagine, to the opposition. So that was interesting, and he scored 2 goals, and at times looked dangerous, even though he was hot and cold throughout the 90 minutes, I thought, as well. But he'd be the second, and I think probably Kevin McKenna would be the next one because of the leadership he showed at the back. It's difficult to sometimes keep hold of the group when you're so dominant in terms of possession, in terms of the chances, and they had to be sharp. And there was a time there where it was so vulnerable. And let's not forget, and Cathal Kelly did a great job with his article in pointing out the fact that, first of all, 1-1, it was a penalty and a handball and a sending off that really turned the game for Canada in terms of they then scoring the goals that they did. So, you know, taking that into account, I could see Kevin McKenna and Andrew Haino at times looking at each other and trying to, you know, motivate their teammates to keep going. And when you're in that vulnerable position at 1-1 in a very difficult environment, and the environment being the fact that if you lose that game or tie that game, it would have been a disaster. And there were some worrying moments going into the second half. I thought Kevin McKenna did a good job in terms of leading the team, and you know, with his personality and with his character and the way that he plays.
Well, we'll hope for some more standout performances in the Puerto Rico game and future matches, and I think we'll continue to get your picks for the 3 stars following every Canadian game in the World Cup qualifying campaign. Moving on, an ongoing point of concern for Canada's home matches has been often overwhelming support for visiting sides and a lack of Canadian supporters at home matches. That wasn't the case against St. Lucia, as there was a fantastic and plentiful pro-Canadian crowd in attendance. What did you make of the home support for this first World Cup qualifier in Toronto?
Well, I thought it was very good, Steve. There's no doubt about that. And what the fantastic part was, for me anyway, was the way that they went about their support. You know, it was like a TFC game. I thought the Voyagers, who have contributed to that, along with the local fan groups, did a great job, you know, in terms of singing and cheering, and really creating an atmosphere. Now, there was, you know, there's 12,000, you know, people there, so it wasn't a packed house, but knowing that it's the first game and almost a preliminary game against a very weak opposition, I would say that was certainly you know, terrific, and something which has been rare in Canada, and hopefully that continues in the next few home games. What I would say is that it's also an indication to me that if the time now in Canada is absolutely right for the game to take off, to really explode. The time for Canada to qualify for the World Cup couldn't be better, because it truly will be, in my opinion, the tipping point of the exposure the game needs, of the revenues and monies that the Canadian Soccer Association need to generate through interest, through TV revenues, through sponsorship. That will come once we qualify. And it's like the fans are telling the industry here, that they have that insatiable appetite now to support, like they do to support domestic professional soccer, but to support the country that we all live in. You know, it's and I honestly believe this too. I believe that they want to be inspired. They're desperate to be inspired by something great within our soccer industry, whether it's the women's team, whether it's the men's team. But to inspire a nation and to inspire fans at that level, you need something special, you know, and you need to have the qualities of how you handle yourself, the things that you do on the field, the way that you play, the way that you train. And that's been missing, and we can't hide our heads in the sand, Steve. We can't brush things under the mat. You know, James Sharman did a great interview, 1v1, with Dwayne De Rosario the other day on The Score, and I'm very fond of James, and a great job developed, in my opinion, to be the top soccer personality that we have. You know, he's very direct, very honest, and it was great. James turned around and said, you know, that if his daughter, he's very proud, he has a daughter now, was ever in a position to play for somebody, she could potentially play for England, but it's Canada who she will play with. And it was absolutely fantastic. It's brilliant. It's exactly how it should be. It should really also be quite simple. You know, James now lives here. His home is Canada. His daughter was born in Canada, so Canada is where, you know, she should play. But, you know, Dwayne had a great opportunity there when it was pointed to him about David Hoilett, whose family now live in Canada, spent more time in Canada than they have in anywhere other place, from, you know, Jamaica. And it was a perfect opportunity for a player on a national team program to be very simple and very direct as far as what would you advise him. And in my opinion, Dwayne didn't go that way. Dwayne turned around and said, well, you know, it's still, you know, if he can play for England, I mean, it's his choice. And, you know, he understands that. That is a perspective. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Dwayne's entitled to his opinion. But we are desperate in this country. We are desperate for a Canadian national team player, a current player, to turn around and say, no, it's not okay. Is that if players are going to live in Canada for the rest of their life, their families reside here, that they were born here, or they live here now, and there is the willingness to want to live in Canada for the rest of their lives, or for a good portion of their lives, then they should want to represent our nation and not look for something that is commercially better, or from a status perspective is a better thing for them. That is a selfish approach. And it's that kind of thing, Steve, that will inspire, I believe, the right mentality and attitude in this country, and it will continue to motivate those fans that were absolutely fantastic. There's no doubt about it, and I was delighted to see, and if they can continue to get results and we get into the second round, then it will get more exciting and hopefully even more passionate.
Right back has been something of a revolving chair for the Canadian national team, with the currently injured Paul Stoltaria and also currently injured Nick Ledgerwood both having played that role for Stephen Hart over the last couple of years. Jamie Peters is probably the most athletically gifted right back in Canada's player pool, but he's not been seeing much playing time at the club level. Jonathan Beaulieu-Borgo, whose regular position is defensive midfielder, got the start at right back against St. Lucia. How do you think he did at fullback, and what do you make of the fact that Peters is getting called up for every Canadian game and training camp, but he isn't playing?
Well, let's take that last one first. Yeah, I think that's an inconsistent decision from Stephen Hart based on other decisions that he's made with other players who don't play on a regular basis or underperform. So, yeah, it's strange. I mean, only Stephen Hart can answer that one. But it is a question mark, and it's disappointing, really, that Jamie Peters hasn't played regularly in England and at Ipswich. And I think, you know, you have to take your benchmark from those instances. When that happens, or if David Edgar gets bounced around from team to team and then doesn't play, you've got to really read the writing on the wall that's correct there, which means they're struggling as players to play at that level. It's not complicated. It's quite straightforward, in my opinion. So it's interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting if Jamie Peters competes and plays. Ideally, I've said it before, I like Jamie Peters as a personality. I like him in terms of his athleticism, but there's question marks on his technical ability as a defender, and as a technical player in terms of playing out of the back. So, you know, those question marks have maybe been answered by the fact that he doesn't play in England. Who knows? But hopefully he gets his chance in the next few games and can prove that he does belong and can do a job there. As far as Bogog goes, it's difficult in that game for anybody, Steve, to come out with, you know, too much credit in terms of being, you know, a terrific performance. But at the same time, it also works the other way about, you know, about poor performances. They really, really weren't, you know, performances that were way off the map as far as being able to compete at the international level. I think Jonathan is really in between. I would be undecided, really, with him. Not overly enamoured based on what I saw, but at the same time, it's he hardly got tested on a defensive side of things because of the weak opposition, and they really only played that one up front for most of the game. So it's a problem position. I'm not sure what's up with Kukowski. I thought Kukowski would have played, but maybe he's coming back from injury as well, or poor performances at the club level. Who knows what Stephen Hart sees? And again, I will say it, and I've said this a lot, you know, we're never quite privy to all the goings on that happen in and around the training camp and what is in Stephen Hart's mind. And it's his prerogative as the national team coach to make those decisions and really not have to explain them to anybody. But he's responsible for the results, and time will tell on that. But it's an issue for sure. I think the issue is at the back, period, and particularly as the goalkeeper, without being too fair on Lars Hirschfeld. But you just can't have that, you know, any kind of half mistake or big mistake. And, you know, there are definitely some issues with this World Cup team, and that's why I think Cathal Kelly's article was absolutely brilliant. It was spot on, in my opinion.
The Canadian Soccer Association announced the hiring of John Herdman as the new head coach of the Canadian women's national team last Thursday. Carolina Marache's successor comes with significant experience in the women's international game, as he was most recently the head coach for New Zealand's senior women's national team, and he was involved with the New Zealand national teams at all the different age levels. What do you think of the hiring of Herdman as the man to lead the Canadian women's national team for the next several years as Canada prepares to host the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup?
It's an interesting hiring, Steve, I would say. I mean, it's layered, I suppose, my response on this. Let's talk about, let's make the statement. I mean, you know, the fact now that Canada has to go to New Zealand, without being too disrespectful to New Zealand, is hardly a soccer power. But we, as a soccer nation, go into New Zealand to pluck away one of their coaches, I think is at best for us as a nation, a very humbling experience. And that is, again, not to be disrespectful of New Zealand or of John Herdman, who's just got hired, but that is a reality. One would have hoped that as a soccer nation, if we would have had our leadership in order over the last two decades, that it would be a Canadian coach that would be hired, and the Canadian coach would be hired not on politics, but on merit. And I think that there's our leaders in our game, and I'm talking about the Canadian Soccer Association, the Bob Leonarduzzis, that we always seem to go to for the answer. That's where the media goes to. They have some answers to do and to explain about why our game is in the position that it's in. And I can tell you right now, a simple answer is that you don't have your very best people that you are asking those questions to, and I'm talking about the governing bodies. You don't have some of your very best people in the positions that they should be in. That's the bottom line. I'll leave it there for now, Steve, on that. But in many ways, it's an indictment of what is wrong within our soccer nation here. And I will say it again, a lot of Canadian coaches get treated like second-class citizens. And that's not for me to be, as a media person, to critique coaches, because I know people will say, well, you've been negative on Stephen Hart, but you know, my critique there, I back that up with facts, with the fact that Stephen Hart, in terms of winning things at the national team level, of playing at the national team level or playing professionally, they weren't there, yet he gets hired. And I think he's done a good job, to be fair, with what then I would say would be limited success to be in such a pedigree position. But that is the nature of our country here, and we need to not bury our heads in the sand and brush things under the mat, but recognize that we are now going to hire a 36-year-old from New Zealand who himself has a very limited playing background and goes to New Zealand, who quite rightly would be in that position, because they are a small soccer nation, would be in that position to give those opportunities to somebody like John Herdman. He's gone in there, he's taken, to be fair to him, full advantage, you know, by qualifying the team twice to the World Cup. But also keep in mind, with Australia moving into the from Oceania into the Asian Confederation, that it's freed up that spot. So it's two-pronged. It's one, the fact that a spot has become available, and two, the fact that that John Herdman has gone in, and this is the upside, and from what I can see, done a very positive job. When he first went to the World Cup, they didn't score a goal. They conceded 9, lost all 3 games. But when they went to the World Cup this time, I mean, you have to say, if they've tied Mexico 2-2, lost 2-1 to England, lost 2-1 to Japan, who eventually won it, there's definitely a linear upward movement on the graph of success for him developing a team, and I would say that that's encouraging and that's good. Here's a warning sign, though, because I hope John Herdman, I hope anybody that comes in from the outside doesn't play political games and make political statements. We are absolutely in desperate need for somebody to come in here. Almost, this is an exaggeration, so I repeat, this is an exaggeration, that we almost need somebody like a Jose Mourinho-type personality to come in here with so much confidence that they themselves, just like the MLS is pulling up the game here by the bootstraps, we need a personality to come in here with a little bit of panache that will pull the game by the bootstraps in how we think and how we go about our business with confidence. But it seems to me that John Herdman has come in and said, well, you know, we're going to play a certain way. We're going to build up on with Caroline and Marachi and the technical side of the game. Okay, we get that. We get that the game has evolved technically, and we have to be that way, and we have to be able to perform. But again, it's not about, if we go Marachi's way, then it was all to be seen when Canada performed at the World Cup in Germany. On a technical level, we don't have players like Japanese players. And unless John Herdman's got 10 or 15 years or 20 years to develop Japanese technically competent players, then he's going to fail, and he's going to fail miserably. So for me, again, it's about a little bit of Evan Pellerud or the old Tony Waiters, and a little bit of Japan and Brazil type way of playing. So what does that mean? It means it's somewhere in between. It means that we have to be technically better. It means we have to have the vision to technically improve our players at a young age level, but have our eyes open to know how much commitment that takes from players, from coaches. That's a problematic thing throughout our country, throughout all the systems that we have, whether it's private academies, whether it's the governing bodies, whether it's even the MLS teams with their own academies. It takes, and it will also take, though, a pragmatic part on a tactical level to know where you are on the universe of technical ability, so that you can then tactically prepare the team properly in how they play. And if you have to go a little bit direct at times, a little bit of playing out of the back and into the midfield to be creative and to slow the game down, then fine. But it has to be, and you have to have it, John Herdman has to have his eyes open. And when somebody comes out so boldly at the beginning to make those statements, I get a little bit concerned, because it's almost like that's what we want to hear. And yet it's going to be far from reality, and he's going to get, as they've said quite nicely, a baptism of fire when they go against the United States, and he will see what the technical level of our players is, and any other little impediments that they have compared to the opposition, which would be athleticism. Our athleticism is not as great as some of the other countries, because in many instances we still don't get our very best athletes, even in women's football, competing and playing. So that's it. I would say overall, you know, it's it's good compared to Marachi. Marachi's reign here speaks for itself. I think he has experience. He's going to be a fighter. He's going to be enthusiastic. He's young. He's enthusiastic. He's going to be passionate. And I think all those things are positive and I'm upbeat. The downside is the fact that we have to go to New Zealand to try and pluck somebody out. And here, wait for it, is that where are our Canadian soccer coaches? Like, what does that say now? And boy, oh boy, the CSA better be hiring a Canadian for the under 20 program, because what truly does that say about our system? You've got Vancouver Whitecaps just hiring, the John Rennie. You've got Montreal hiring Marsh. We've got our CSA now hiring somebody from the outside, an English New Zealand coach. Where does that generation that Bobby would have been a part of, or just a little bit younger than Bobby's generation, where do they fit in? And they just don't get the opportunities. They're not going to have the opportunities. There's going to be a missing generation. And we're always talking about players. We're always talking about developing players. But you need to develop your players. And it's the same thing as I've said before. It's about motivation and it's about opportunity. Yet we don't give it. And it's because the leaders in our game, you know, and I'm at the point, Steve, almost, you know, been so fed up. And that's why I talk about it so passionately. It's because it's annoying. And it's annoying when the media go to the same people, when people get into positions that really, truly haven't paid their dues, that we have the wrong messages being relayed in certain environments. And then this is what happens at the end. We reap what we sow, and we will continue to reap what we sow unless we change our attitude. And to change your attitude, you need leaders with vision and with leaders that were going to inspire people by the decisions that they make. And along the way, those decisions need to be tough. They can't be selfish. They can't be based on nepotism. They need to be based on merit. And people that have the right values need to rise to the surface, but they need to rise to the surface. And this is where I said the other, this is where it can contribute, where Cathal Kelly, Stephen Brunch of the world, that have no agendas. They're not paid to be involved in football or soccer at all. Yet they come in and they hit it right on the head, the nail on the head. They generally get the subject matter right when they talk about soccer issues. And it's because they have no agenda and they're intellectual. And we'll write the right things as they see it, and based on a little bit of research. I think those people, along with some of the leaders from outside the game that have become stakeholders, whether it's at Rogers or whether it's at CBC, that they can contribute by doing the right things and making sure that they unearth properly what the real issues that we have in this country and promoting it in the right way, because we don't always get it right. And I think that that hiring of John Herdman on a negative side, which has got nothing to do with him, that's not his fault. He's coming into to this environment, which is going to be a difficult one for him. But it definitely, the decision by Peter Montopoli exposes our industry for sure and exactly where we're at.
As we've done many times in the past, I'd like to end off this episode of the Paul James on Soccer podcast by getting you to answer a couple of questions submitted by your listeners. Peter Parker, a regular Red Nation reader, submitted the following question. Paul, in your opinion, what were the major problems in personnel and or tactics which undermined our previous World Cup qualifying campaign under Dale Mitchell?
It's an interesting question, Steve, and I believe you said it was Peter Parker who wrote that. That question was addressed to me, I think, maybe a dozen podcasts ago, and it's a little bit different, I suppose, what he's asking there, but I have addressed that before. And so, again, with Dale Mitchell, who was my assistant a decade ago, I think, first of all, Dale got ruthlessly maligned in the media with the 2007 performance of the under-20 team, like very unfairly, incredibly unfairly. He might have been able to have done something different. He might have done something different that would have scored a few goals for Canada. They might have been able to have sneaked out a tie somewhere along the line. But they were so far out of their depth with who they were going to play. And it's, if you look at the history of our under-17 team and under-20 team, that is par for the course. So it was unfair what happened to Dale in that. And then when he goes to take on the World Cup team, he was a sitting duck to be targeted. And in my opinion, what Dale needed to do on a team building issue, before you even talk about tactics, that I know Peter has asked about, his biggest problem was his player personnel. And it wasn't even about the abilities of the players that he had had the, maybe at the back. I mean, I know I recommended him, Jason DeVos, to do whatever he did to get Jason DeVos back, because Jason was still in his playing days, could still be able to contributed, and we were desperate at the back at that period. But Dale had his reasons for not selecting Jason DeVos. But that was, so that would be the first thing on an ability level. But the biggest problem he had was the personalities that didn't believe in Dale and were at the first opportunity were going to undermine him, and they did ruthlessly. And it's where that we cannot have, you know, that that happening in the future, and it needs to be ruthlessly exposed in the media and for people in the know. And I'm in the know because I would have. Well, first of all, Dwayne De Rosario comes out in the media and exposes himself, and then Dale Mitchell cut him. But it wasn't just Dwayne De Rosario; he was the leader of the pack. And what's happened subsequently in Dwayne's career has exposed him for what he is as a personality, and he's a negative personality, whichever way you want to shape it and dice it. And when you have that times five other players within that squad, I won't mention who they are, I've mentioned it in the past, you as a coach are absolutely sitting duck. And on top of it, a lot of those the agenda building goes through to the forum where there's people on that, and before you know it, the pressure that Dale must have been under must have been excruciating. And when you're in that environment as a coach, I've been in an environment not as high level as that, but certainly at a national team level, it is excruciating to deal with, particularly when you don't make much money and you have to worry about where your career is going to go if you get fired. But you know, what happens is that Dale gets fired because the people that played that game, that's what they wanted. And again, it's an unfair reflection. It's an indictment of what goes on in our industry here. And it might go on in other parts of the world, but the problem that for people that would support that goes on in other parts of the world is that in other parts of the world, what regulates the information is the mass media, because the mass media eventually get it right. Somebody writes the things and says the things that absolutely put it in perspective what the situation is. That didn't happen for Dale, and I feel for him. Tactically, he could have gone a different system, in my opinion, but no matter what he would have done, it would not have made a difference. The only thing that Dale could have done to have helped our team get through in that period and saved his own job was to have made very difficult, tough decisions with a group of five or six players that he had. He should have cut three or four of them. And he would have, but, you know, damned if you do, damned if you do. If he would have done that, he would have got mauled over the Voyagers forum. He would have got mauled in the media because people wouldn't have understood it, because they don't understand the dynamics of negative personalities and having too many negative personalities within your matrix of a team. I tell you what, Aaron Vinter understands that. Aaron Vinter, that's when we talk about, I think you can ask me a question about Aaron Vinter right now, but Aaron Vinter, the one thing, he hasn't got results as everybody would want and what he would want himself, but I can tell you this, he certainly sorted out and straightened out the right attitudes and the right approaches. And if only he could do that with the personnel now within the TFC club, outside the playing personnel, I should say, then he would be in an even better position. But again, we're in an immature nation, soccer nation. Peter Parker, for asking that question, we're in a very immature soccer nation that needs to mature quickly. And it's the mainstream people like you, I'm assuming, as a listener, and other people out there, that you need to demand more. You need to demand, you know, forget the political reform. The political reform is okay. Politics are okay. But politics with principles, in my opinion, are what we need. And to do that, you need the right people leading this country that will inspire, not based on selfishness and not based on what they can get out of the game by doing very little in return.
Tim Baker submitted the following question via email. Mr. James, for all of the talk about Toronto FC being improved this season, the fact is that the team is most likely going to end the season with the same poor record the team has had in its first 4 years, as well as once again out of the MLS playoffs, which will now feature 10 teams. This is unacceptable to me. Aaron Vinter seems like a decent chap, but he's not won me over as a coach. You seem to like him a lot, and I always thought you would have made a good choice as Toronto's head coach or general manager. Was the job ever one that you were interested in, and what would you do if you were in it now?
That's an interesting question. I I mean, back in 2003, I went to University of Liverpool, did this dissertation about MLS coming into the city of Toronto to improve the system here. I mean, I did do all that, and I have to be honest, for sure, I would have been interested in definitely not coaching. I wanted to move away from coaching, even though I did go to York at that stage. But there's no doubt about it. I mean, a vision I had on a personal level would have been to have been a GM within Toronto FC. And I think that, you know, for whatever way, I don't want to, you know, lament about it at this stage. That has definitely passed me by, for sure. I didn't ever discuss anything with MLSC. I was never ever contacted about anything. And again, all I put it down to is I think I was probably overqualified for the job than anything else. I had everything in place. What I didn't have is the social connectivity. And if you don't have that, if you don't network yourself, you get undermined, for sure. And I would have got undermined in many areas. So that's the brutal reality of that. And but no problem, I got on with my life. If I was in that position today, well, first of all, I wouldn't accept the GM position at Toronto FC. The only position I would accept would be president of the club. And then I would go from there, and I would I wouldn't even begin with the starting team, to be honest, Steve. I wouldn't begin with a squad of 18. I would start with the academy and make personnel changes there. They've got starting with the director of the academy, which is the wrong person. I would go to Gold TV, and I would get the right people. I would hire James Sharman within a nanosecond. If they want to truly get people to watch Gold TV, you need the right people involved in that as well. And then I would begin on the team, and I would hire the right coach, of which Aaron Vinter right now would get the opportunity under me. And I would make the vision proper for what the club should be selling to their fans. I don't even know what their vision is, because I've never heard of it, but you certainly need that in place. The bottom line is that I'm absolutely not interested in that position, but that's what I would do. In a nutshell, it would be to get the right people involved within the club at all levels, including your office staff, including the academy people. And to have the right people, you need the people which have proven success, have a little bit of pedigree, and have absolutely the right values that are not political in terms of how they get into those positions. Don't undermine, don't talk negatively about people behind their backs so that they can get forward. I know some people will say it's idealistic, but it is also realistic if you look at the clubs around the world that are the most successful in the world, and even organizations for that matter. So anyway, Steve, I'll leave it at that. I'm absolutely have moved on from that part of my life, but it was good to reminisce a little bit about that. And let's hope that Canada can beat Puerto Rico on Tuesday, and we can get excited about what would happen down the road, so even as difficult as it would be, no matter what the results in the next few games.
If you have questions that you'd like Paul to address, please send your email to pauljames@rednationonline.ca.